All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Fundamentally Sound Podcast. We are powered by CLNS Media. It's Selection Sunday. We're recording this here at record about 9 o'clock on Sunday night. And I had Mike Rutherford from SB Nation and Card Chronicle. You know him if you follow the sport, if you're on Twitter, everything like that, to come on and kind of talk about the brackets and everything like that. So we won't spend too much time, but as always, I have to request, please rate, review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, whatever. Definitely helps this time of the year at the back end stuff, getting guests, everything along those lines, and putting out better and more shows for you guys. Along with that, check out my guys, 19.9.com. That's 19.9.com. They have all the best, you know, retro replica shorts, t-shirts, sweatshirts. They have teams like Xavier, Wake Forest, Marquette, Purdue, Indiana, Michigan State. Awesome, awesome site. Whatever you buy at checkout, put in Fundamentals, and you get 10% off. It's an awesome deal. I have three pairs of shorts. I'm getting more stuff from them because I love it that much. I have a pair of the Randolph Childress era Wake shorts. I have the late 90s Butler shorts, and I have the Larry Bird Indiana State shorts, and I wear them all the time. They're comfortable as hell. So, again, go to 19.9.com, and at checkout, use Fundamentals. You get 10% off. You can't beat it. Along with that, my guys at 19.9 and I are putting on a bracket challenge. I have it on Twitter where the winner is going to get a free selection of a shirt and shorts from 19.9. So it's free to enter. Again, bracket challenge. It's on CBS Sports. It's on Twitter. So go ahead, click that, sign up. Again, if you win, you get free stuff. You can't beat it. It's free entry. So we'll get right into it with my guy, Mike Rutherford. Like I said, SB Nation, Card Chronicle. If you're on Twitter, if you follow the sport, you know who he is. We'll get right into it. All right, and now I welcome on my guy, Mike Rutherford, who's really from all over. If you're on the internet, you probably read him or follow him somewhere. CardChronicle.com, SB Nation, Ramsey and Rutherford on 790 KRD, and the author of 100 Things Louisville. Mike, what's going on, man?
Not too much, dude. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, man. It's a we're recording Sunday, like 9 o'clock. I guess we got to start with where you're based out of. Louisville missing the NCAA tournament. What, obviously, you get the win in the ACC tournament against Florida State on, what was that, Wednesday? And what were your feelings as the week, you know, went on from there? And I guess, like, the general feelings down there in Louisville. Did you guys think you were comfortable? Was it, oh no, once San Diego State won? Or what was happening down there?
So you ask about feelings as if, you know, we're like still alive beings down here in Louisville, and that's not really the case. I mean, if I were a mere mortal, a mere sports mortal at this point, tonight would have been brutal for me. But I'm sort of like a severed zombie head that wasn't stabbed. I was just like decapitated. So I'm just like the head's just kind of sitting alone underneath a tree somewhere and just sort of observing the rest of the sports world. I can't do anything about it. I'm clearly dead inside. I can't even eat people anymore. I'm just kind of there. That's sort of where we are. We've been dead for a long time. So the not making the NCAA tournament was just the latest blow. And I don't think it was it wasn't a huge surprise to anybody down here. I think that people were holding out onto some degree of hope because Louisville had a strong RPI. It had strong predictive metric numbers if the committee was going to look at that stuff. But I think everybody sort of believed that loss to Virginia, which we've now seen a billion times on every single game ever played since, was going to be what wound up keeping this team out of the tournament. And in the end, it probably did. I was a little surprised that they weren't one of the first four out.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, to see them not pop up was not a shock. Although I clearly need to work on my alphabet because that new stupid reveal that they did in alphabetical order, I had no idea what was going on. I had to have Gumbel like tell me that because I was looking at Miami, it meant Louisville was out. I was like, oh, well, shit. I was paying no attention. I don't know my alphabet clearly because I didn't even realize that my favorite team was not going to make the tournament right there.
I was doing the same thing. I was sitting there going, okay, we're at the – and then I was like, all right, Alabama, Auburn. Oh, wait a minute. Baylor's not in? Hold on. What the hell is going on here? I was like – it was stupid. Like, that whole show was stupid. I'm so mad there wasn't a heckler in the crowd. I'm so mad that they did it that way. Like, that was the dumbest thing in the world. What was the worst decision? That or the 1 year of Jennifer Hudson singing One Shining Moment?
Oh, that is... That is a juicy, juicy pick'em. That is a Sophie's choice right off the bat here.
Both go. All right, here's the better way to do it. Going forward, you have to pick one or the other of what happens every year: Jennifer Hudson's one shining moment or the reveal the way it happened today.
I mean, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I think I'm going Hudson. I think I'm going back to Jennifer Hudson.
I'm the opposite side.
Here's the deal, so I came at it this year from somebody who was trying to sort of write about this as it was going on, but also see whether or not Louisville was in the team. If I was a fan of a team comfortably in the field, I feel like it would have pissed me off even more, just because you've got the slow reveal. Like, they gave us the reveal, and they used the word reveal, of the automatic bids. I mean, we know the 32 teams that won their conference tournaments. If you're watching the selection show, you know that. And they still had to go in alphabetical order through that dumbass, like just process.
And I feel like they took shorter, like, they waited longer, like, naming those teams than they did the, like, at-large teams. Like, they were blowing through the at-large teams. I'm like, wait a minute, where are we at here? I'm still counting, like, A, B, C, D.
Yes, yeah. And if you're a fan of Villanova or Virginia or Kentucky or Arizona or whoever, like, you're literally just tuning in to see who you're going to play first, whether or not you got a good or a bad draw. That's all you care about. And the whole purpose of the slow build is kind of to see, you know, what at-large teams are going to get left out, because when you see a 6-11 pop up and you're not there, you're like, oh my God, there's only two or three more left. Like, that's way more fun than trying to remember where your team's first letter sits in the alphabet and whether or not they've already been left out. It was bad on every single level.
Yeah, and then what made it even worse for the reveal is they blew through the brackets. Like, when they were announcing the seedings, it was like, all right, here's the West, and wasted, like, it took 30 seconds, and I was like, hold on, I'm still trying to figure out what's the 5-12 game here.
Yeah, they did it from what looked like the Starship Enterprise with a large audience. There was no point in the two hosts being, I mean, a football field apart and screaming at one another. The audio was messed up. It was on TBS. It didn't need to be 2 hours. This should be the easiest damn win for CBS and Turner, and they keep finding new ways to complicate it and screw it up.
It's hard to fuck up this reveal. They do it every year.
The tournament is for kind of like the casual fan, fan who wants to fill out a bracket, pick out funny names, win their office pool. The selection show is for people who follow this closely and have kind of been, you know, have a really specific idea of how this works and how it's supposed to work. And they cater to the wrong – they cater to a group of people that aren't tuning into the selection show, and it makes absolutely no sense.
So I want to stick with the ACC because you mentioned, you know, kind of how it was – you're figuring out who's in, who's out, whatnot. How the hell was Syracuse in, and how the hell was Notre Dame the first team that got bumped for when Davidson beat Rhode Island today?
Because Notre Dame
both
thing
that makes zero sense to me.
The Notre Dame thing blows my mind, and I was sort of railing against this last week just because it kept being talked about so much by everybody who was calling the ACC tournament games. The notion that Notre Dame was this just universal wrecking machine before they had the injury to Bonzi Colson and the injuries to Matt Farrell and DJ Harvey and all those guys is just patently false. I mean, they won the Maui Invitational, but they beat Chaminade, they beat a terrible LSU team, and then they beat Wichita State in a game where they were down basically the entire time, and it took a crazy sequence of events at the end for them to win. And Wichita State, by the way, they're really good, but they're not quite as good as we thought they were back in November. So that's why Notre Dame ended up becoming number 5 in the country. And they turn around, they get just walloped by Michigan State. They lose on a neutral to Indiana. They get beat at home by Ball State. And that's with themselves at full strength. Right. That is before anything hit them. They were one of the worst teams in the ACC when they were going through that stretch where Colson was out and Farrell missed 5 games and all that stuff. But then even when Bonzi came back and they were at full strength, they beat Pitt. They played a close game against Virginia. They barely beat Pitt again in the ACC tournament, squeaked out a win over Virginia Tech, who's good but not great, and then got handled pretty thoroughly by Duke. Like, what about that resume indicates that they should have been in the NCAA tournament? Like, there's just nothing there. I was blown away that they were the team that got their bid stolen by Davidson on Sunday.
Right, because here's the other thing. Yes, Bonzi Colson is a likely All-American at one of the teams if he's healthy the entire year. But you can play this game with how many teams, right? Like, are we going to say, well, Kentucky played the first 10 games or 15 games without Jared Vanderbilt? Do they not count as much as the games with him? does UNC when they miss Cam Johnson? And, you know, now he's obviously healthy and playing. Are we counting the games out of him? West Virginia and Issa Ahmad. Like, all these other games, it's like, or other teams, it's like, they all missed a vital player on the roster. Now, yes, I get it. They're not as good at, or as big as a name as Bonzi Colson, but you can do this with almost every team in the country.
You know what USC should have done? They should have been like, we're going to play D'Anthony Melton in the tournament. If you put us in, he's eligible. That's it. He's back. Like, think about how good we would have been with that guy all year. Or Louisville could have been like, you know what? Brian Bowen's coming back. We don't care that he's at South Carolina. He's going to play for us in the tournament. Put us in the field. Like, it just, it does not work that way. And again, like, if they had been one of the most obvious four or five best teams in the country when they were fully healthy, like, I would have, I'd have little problem with them being in the tournament with the resume they've got right now. But they weren't. Like they did not. They lost to Ball State at home. They lost to Indiana on a neutral. They got destroyed by Michigan State. They've got one quality win on their full strength resume. That's, to me, just, it's not enough to justify the fact that they lost seven straight, had a losing record in the ACC, and, you know, every other metric shows that they're not a tournament team. I did not understand that at all.
Yeah, and how the hell did Syracuse get in? Because they lost at home to Notre Dame when they weren't full strength. Like, that alone should have knocked them out.
Yeah, the Syracuse thing, I get that. I don't really get it either, because it wasn't just the Notre Dame. Yeah, they had losses to the worst teams in the ACC.
Lost at Wake Forest.
Yeah, everybody besides Pitt. They lost to Wake, Georgia Tech, and who's the one I'm forgetting? The Boston College. They lost to all three of those teams. So,
and St. Bonaventure.
They lost to St. Bonaventure.
A home game.
But if history says anything, they're probably going to win three or four games in this tournament.
I know. I tweeted
that's what happens.
I tweeted out the moment their name got called. I said, this is going to be one of those years where Syracuse makes a tournament that they're not supposed to and makes a Final Four. Because it's same thing as 2 years – as whatever it was, 2 years ago.
2 years ago was I think, even more egregious than this year. I mean, that team – I get that they won four games and made the Final Four. It doesn't mean that they deserve to be in the NCAA tournament, because they didn't. Their RPI was atrocious. Their wins, lack of quality wins did not justify inclusion, and they caught a couple breaks in the NCAA tournament. That's fine. I think the same thing about VCU in 2011. Just because they went on a big run – doesn't mean they deserve to be in the tournament. Nobody was ever arguing that they couldn't play with teams in the field. It was just that they had not proven it throughout the course of the regular season. That's how this whole thing's supposed to work. I don't get Syracuse being in USC, over Oklahoma State, over a lot of the other teams that got left out. They did not seem to have a resume that stacked up against those teams. But you know what? More power to Jim Boeheim. I guess he's got some sort of Jedi mind shit going on with the NCAA committee.
So I think there were three teams left out that I kind of had a problem with. They were Baylor, and this is no particular order, but Baylor, USC, and Oklahoma State. And I would have taken Syracuse out. I'm not entirely sure how St. Bonaventure got into. Like, they kind of were talked about as a lock. And I went back and looked at the resume. It's like, they lost to Niagara. Now, granted, they didn't have Jalen Adams for that game. But, again, are we playing that game for everybody? They're banking the road win at Syracuse, which I guess meant a lot to the committee, and the home win over Rhode Island.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was just one of those where, like, when I'm looking at it, I'm like, yeah, okay, like, they might look the part, but what do they have that Oklahoma State isn't better at, or that Baylor didn't have a better resume at?
I wish we could get some sort of clear indication from the NCAA committee about, like, what they specifically emphasize more than other things, because we get this sort of vague laundry list of criteria that they use to evaluate bubble teams against one another. But if they came out and just said, the clear distinction here is the RPI, or the clear distinction here is the quadrant system, I'd have less of a problem with some of these decisions, because St. Bonaventure, I mean, the predictive metrics just absolutely hate them. They're like 60-something on KenPom, I think the same in Sagarin, but the other numbers kind of back them up a little bit. But, you know, what you just listed right there is a clear argument against them.
Right.
And the same thing with Baylor. They've got the wins to back up inclusion. They obviously played in the most complete conference in the country. But their RPI was 68. Like, if that's what kept them out, if it was just strictly RPI based, then go ahead and say that. But then you can't, in the next breath, say, you know, we thought USC didn't have the full body of work when their RPI is what, 33, something historically
34,
high.
I think, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the highest RPI of a major conference team that's ever been left out, and it would have been Louisville this year, which was 38, had USC not also been left out. Not sure the FBI stuff didn't play in there, but you know, we're just, whatever. We're throwing that out there.
Yeah, it was just weird. So what is your – because now comes my absolute favorite time. Everyone looks at the brackets. Everyone listens to the talking heads, and it becomes conspiracy theory talk. What's your favorite conspiracy theories of this year in terms of whether who got in, who got out, or certain matchups? Because I think matchup conspiracy theory is my favorite.
I do too, and I wish that we had gotten, you know, the sexy Rhode Island Arizona State potential matchup, because that would have been great. I really wanted
the Hurley brothers fought each other during that game.
They would have. Well, here's what I really wanted, and I was all set to write like a mock blog post about this if it happened. I wanted the take, the conspiracy theory that Danny Hurley, after years of being overshadowed by Bobby, threw the Atlantic 10 championship game. Thinking that it would get Arizona State left out of the tournament, because that would have been just the biggest like badass overshadowed brother move of all time. Like
that's my favorite conspiracy theory ever. Like we were done the podcast that one.
Yeah, I mean remember when you kicked my ass when like I was 9 years old?
Well, the Duke Seton Hall tournament game where he just torched, where he just torched Bobby or torched Danny.
Here's a wide open Peyton Aldridge three in your dome. Like that was for you. Right. We left them wide open in the corner. Not a defensive breakdown by EC Matthews. That was a strict instruction. He's guess what? You're home.
He's texting him on the sideline with the phone out, just taking a video and sending it to him. That'd be my favorite. Like that would be my favorite move that would top the Randolph Childress come hither to Jeff McInnes.
I really wanted it to happen. And they were kind of getting spanked a little bit in the second half. And yeah. I was like, all right, I've got the first two paragraphs already laid out here. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. And I guess they would – well, they're in the same region, so I guess it's still possible that they could meet, but it would have to be, I think, in the Sweet 16. But I'd love to see that one. But I do love the conspiracy theory that, you know, Louisville, Oklahoma State, and USC all got left out for FBI reasons.
That's a good one.
It's kind of got some backing. Like legitimate people are sort of like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. I mean, when you look at, as upset as I am as a Louisville fan, you kind of look at it and you say, okay, like they had ample opportunity. The numbers don't add up. It's a clear argument against it, against Louisville being included. If you're USC and you finish second in the Pac-12 and you make the Pac-12 championship game and play a pretty competitive game against Arizona, but don't get in, and an Arizona State team that finished ninth and got housed in the first game by Colorado does. Like I'm beyond furious. If I'm one of the 25 legitimate USC basketball fans out there, I'm throwing stuff all night.
Right. Like that's a good argument there. Because the one argument then is I've seen people put that out there and be like, you know, they're screwing the teams that caught up in the FBI investigation. People are responding like Arizona's a 4 seed and Auburn's a 4 seed. It's like, well, you can't really leave them out either. Obviously, yeah, that would have been from the automatic, but
if one of those two got left out, then I think we would have had something. If Auburn had been like an 11 seed, then I would have been like, okay, there's something here. But Oklahoma State, I mean, they do have a ridiculous amount of top 50 wins. I mean, there were legit arguments to be made for all three of those teams. It is a little bit funny how they got left out. But I guess if the NCAA was really committed to this thing, they would just keep screwing Syracuse for like that really bizarre academic fraud from 4 or 5 years ago. But hey, they haven't done that.
Yeah, they keep getting rewarded instead. No, here's what it is though. Like UNC gets rewarded, and maybe you just need academic fraud as opposed to anything else, and that's how you advance here.
They want you to forget about the academic stuff.
Like, right,
That's what they're doing. And maybe Notre Dame was included because they had the football academic scandal, and so they get kind of lumped under that umbrella too.
Because I'm looking at the bracket here, and there's no real like second round matchup or anything like that sticks out where it's the conspiracy theory. Like, you know, like Kentucky, West Virginia every year seems to play each other, or you know, you get the former assistant versus, you know, current head coach or current head coach going back against a former team, something like that. I don't really see anything possible except for maybe like Xavier, Ohio State in the Sweet 16.
Yeah. I know Calipari. I don't know if he's talked yet. You would probably seen it. I'm sure he's upset with their draw. I call it the Wildcat pod. You know, you've got Kentucky, Davidson, and Arizona all there.
Yeah.
And the poor Buffalo Bulls who are just – at least they'll be able to identify one another when they're in Boise.
Right.
Because I'm sure it's going to be a hot, hot draw for everybody to make that trip out to Boise.
Calipari was actually tame during his interview on ESPN.
Really?
Like
So
he started off with being like, I was in the car with my wife, and like my phone just started going off, and like it was pretty much just saying – how many different ways could you get screwed? But he didn't really – like he did kind of make a point of, well, you know, at least the committee has us playing Friday, and he's like, oh, wait, no, they don't. We're Thursday. Like, other than that, like, because Jay Williams asked him about Jared Vanderbilt, and he was like, well, at least we have, you know, like, we played today, so we have that extra day. He's like, oh, wait, never mind. They're putting us on Thursday.
Well, that's way more passive aggressive than he typically is. Yeah. Usually he's just like way up front about everything.
Well, the one complaint I have is, why do we have these championship games on Sunday if they don't mean anything from a seeding standpoint?
I've been barking up that tree for as long as I could, you know, follow the sport. It's been like, I wrote about it for like two or three straight years when I started working at SB Nation. And finally, I just kind of dropped it because I was writing the same things every year. But, you know, they used to at least sort of like play up this facade that it actually did matter. And, you know, they have all these different brackets and stuff. And then I think it was 2 or 3 years ago when they had that stupid media mock selection thing that they always used to do, which I love how the media members would always be like, this is actually, it's quite insightful, as if like the mock like United Nations tells you exactly what happens at the real United Nations. It's a joke. But they said during that thing a few years ago that the year Florida was the number one overall seed, 2014, when they were so good, if Kentucky had won that game, it wouldn't have mattered. It was too late. And so Kentucky, who everybody thought was already underseeded as an 8 that year, they wouldn't have moved up at all by beating the tournament's number one overall seed, which is just it's ridiculous. You should not have those games.
The one that sticks out to me was the year 2 years ago. Was it 2 years ago? Yeah, when Kentucky beat A&M in overtime.
Yeah.
And they ended up as a 4 seed in that Carolina-Indiana region, and A&M ended up as a 3 seed. And it's like, wait a minute, these two teams literally just played. They have the same, pretty much the same resume, and Kentucky just got the win. Why are we playing these games on Sunday? Like, everything should be done Saturday, seed Saturday night, and then you go. Or vice versa, everybody plays Sunday, and you seed Sunday.
That was the one that resulted in my favorite all-time John Calipari hates the SEC yes. tournament, where he said that they should play it at the beginning of the year.
Yep. Which, I mean, it's like, to a degree, it's true. Like, not just the SEC, but conference tournaments in general for these major conferences, they're mostly irrelevant if you're already like set in the field.
Sure. I mean, and they say that. They have said that time and time again. And when the Big Ten used to play its the Big Ten conference tournament championship game would end like literally five minutes before the start of the selection show. And there was a couple of years. There was 1 year where Illinois made a miracle run to the championship game, and they had to have like two distinct brackets. And it was obvious when I think the year that Georgia won, when things got so crazy with the tornado and everything, like they had obviously not really planned for it. And so they just kind of like chucked Georgia into the field in a place that made no sense.
Yeah, weren't they like an 11 or 12, yeah. 14 seed or something weird like that?
It was whatever it was, just wound up being ridiculous. And the same with Xavier the 1 year they went on a miracle run. They wound up being like a 10 seed, this team that was clearly out of the field before they won their conference tournament. Yeah, the committee basically makes up its mind by Friday, it seems like. So if I could do away with one thing in this whole process, it would be eliminating conference tournament championship games on Sunday. Outside of like a couple of low major teams where you can automatically slot them as like 15, 16, whatever.
But even then, I'd rather them have a day to – like, I almost wish they would do all the games on Saturday, and I almost wish they didn't do anything on Sunday and then do the bracket reveal Monday. Like, have a full day of working on seeding.
I would support that. I mean, look, no sport is more reliant on its postseason in this country than college basketball is with the NCAA tournament. So why not get it right? Why not come as close to getting an accurate bracket as you possibly can? And if it takes a full day for that to happen, like, I'm willing to wait for that. I would totally be behind that.
Yeah, right, because especially you hear all these coaches, they're like, we don't care about travel necessarily. We care about matchups.
Right.
And I'd rather be seated correctly and travel to – you know, if you're on the East Coast, travel to Omaha, then be seated like a seed line works and play in Boston or something like that.
And they've gotten, I guess, a little bit better about that in recent years because they used to screw it up like once every year. They had, they'd have Louisville when they were a 6 seed in, I think it was 2007. They played Texas A&M in Rupp Arena when A&M was a 3 seed. Yep, that was the Billy Gillespie. Yep. There used to always be something like that. And there was the 1 year where they scheduled poor BYU to play on Sunday, and you know they can't do that, so they had to flip all the times. Yeah.
I remember that. So, all right. So, looking at the brackets here, does anything jump out to where you're locked in and being like, all right, I kind of want to see this play out?
I want to see the first thing that jumped out to me was Kentucky and Arizona in the second round. I think that was the big one for everybody, just because. I mean, you've got two name brands, two of the most talented teams in this tournament, two teams that are playing well at the right time, both won their conference tournament. And then my secondary thought related to that is poor Virginia. Right. I mean,
that was my takeaway.
My God, it's got to be the takeaway. They're the number one overall seed. And they're supposed to be protected.
Yeah, you get Kentucky, Arizona, even Tennessee. Like Tennessee won a share of the SEC regular season title, made the conference tournament final with a chance to win, and they're your three seed.
Yeah, the only team in that top. Well, who's the sixth seed there?
Miami.
Miami. So the only team in the top five seeds in your region that didn't win its conference tournament championship was one that got beat by one of the other top five seeds in the same region. That just seems like it's poor planning there. But I mean, I do think that the Tennessee, Cincinnati 2 and 3 is not the toughest combination. If Virginia does make it to the Elite Eight, but it's just getting there. It's getting past the Sweet 16, which seems unfair. And I also think Kentucky and Arizona both got two pretty tough first round games.
Yeah,
they can't really look ahead. Davidson's playing as well as anybody at that level in that double digit seed area. I think they've only lost
plays to Davidson. Like
you're right.
Davidson, you know, they want to beat you by shooting threes. Kentucky tries to take away the three, you know, defend the three, and it's like, okay, well that's. Whoever wins that's going to win this game. It's going to be a close game.
I think so, too. And, I mean, they've lost one game since, I think, February 9th, and it was that triple overtime game to St. Bonaventure.
Yeah.
Buffalo dominated the MAC. They played, I think, five tournament teams during the non-conference portion of the season, so they're battle-tested. It's just a really tough top half of the bracket.
Yeah, and the fact that it's out in Boise. So, like, three of the four teams traveling, like, you know, multiple time zones, right? They're, like, mountain time zone.
Yeah.
So you're traveling two time zones. It's always a little weird when you have a lot of teams doing that. You know, usually I feel like you have two teams somewhat close to home. Well, this time you have three traveling. That's just going to be a weird pod, I feel like.
But that was my initial, like, the early potential second round matchup standout. The other one that stood out to me, and it's for different reasons because it's one of my major March rules, is everybody's going to say, like, Colin Sexton versus Villanova. Here we go. Like, this is going to happen. Let's do this. I want this. You want this. Everybody wants this. And it's true. And whenever that's the case, it never winds up happening. Something always falls apart in the sexiest second round matchup. And I've said for years that whenever the bracket comes out, the 1-8-9 death game team that everybody's saying, look out, they could really put a scare into so-and-so in the second round, that team always loses. It always happens. So, like
I was thinking that about Michael Porter Jr. and Xavier.
There's that, too. My guy, Dr. Dunk, on Twitter, and we've coined it the Arizona, because we used to feel like Arizona was always that team when we were growing up, and now whoever the 8-9 special that everybody's picking is always going to lose, that's the Arizona winner. I'm going with Alabama. It could be Missouri. That's a good pick as well. But even though I want to pick Bama over Virginia Tech, because I think they're probably a better and definitely more talented team, I'm going to pick Virginia Tech just because I have to abide by my own rule.
Yeah, I've been looking at the one seeds here. And, you know, I think Virginia has a tough draw after the first weekend in the Sweet 16. But with the other three one seeds, who do you think you look at and you're like, oh, they might not make it out of this first weekend here?
Because
I have a take about Kansas. Like, I think Kansas is really good, but I think Seton Hall and NC State are both terrible matchups for them.
I could see that.
As Ibuki isn't playing with what Angel Delgado can do.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I think NC State, like, I'm always wary of overachieving major conference teams that kind of have a little bit of hype. I feel like they kind of fit that mold. But Seton Hall has been, I mean, they've got, what, four starters that have played in three straight NCAA tournaments. They should be battle-tested at this point. I've kind of been disappointed in the way they've played the last couple months, but you're right. That could definitely be one of those bizarre. It could be like the Carolina Arkansas game last year.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I could definitely see that playing out where they get a real big scare. I think Kansas benefits in the Sweet 16. I don't think that there's really a significant threat there. Clemson and Auburn, I think, are both sort of pretenders. But then, of course, you got Duke and Michigan State lurking. But crazy stuff happens. I feel like you can never look ahead to a potential Elite Eight matchup as like a bad draw. If you're trying to justify a bad draw, you can't do that because we did that last year with, you know, Nova Duke was going to be a stone cold lock, and they both didn't make it out of the first weekend.
Yeah, I've been doing the same similar thoughts with you, where it's like, for Villanova and Kansas both, if they get out of the first weekend, I like them almost immediately to get to the Elite Eight.
Like, I think I'm with you.
Because I almost think Clemson and Auburn are both going to lose their first round games. And then, so if Kansas can buy and Seton Hall or NC State, it's like, all right, they get a 12 or 13 seed. They should be in the Elite Eight. And then Nova, I think they would destroy West Virginia's press.
And
Wichita State can't defend anybody.
I think of the 4-1 seeds, Nova got the best draw. And looking big picture, looking like all encompassing, like everything included, I think they're playing in the weakest overall region. They may have the potentially, you know, second toughest or toughest second round game. Because I think Tech and Alabama are both pretty good teams. But looking big picture wise, I think they probably got the best overall draw. I like the fact that we have like sort of the former mid-major, but now like don't call us mid-major powerhouses in Xavier and Gonzaga potentially playing in the Sweet 16. I think that could be a cool role reversal for Gonzaga where, you know, everybody's always – they're always the one or two seed that everybody says won't make it past the Sweet 16, and now maybe they pick off Xavier, the team that everybody's saying is the most vulnerable one seed.
Yeah, it's funny. That's how Xavier – like, listen to everybody. Everyone's like, Xavier's not going to – not getting past the Sweet 16. Not getting past the Sweet 16. And I think I'm automatically just going to pencil them in the Final Four because of that.
I just love that, like, we have these just – perceptions of programs and things that they can't do strictly because they've never done it before. Like 2 years ago, it was Nova. They always choke. They're never going to make it. Then they win the title. And now they're these world beaters that everybody is sort of riding on every March. Last year, it's Gonzaga. They can never make a Final Four. Now they've made a championship game and everybody's like, well, wow, look at them as a four seed. They may be underseeded. Like you would never have said that if Gonzaga had been upset in the second round last year or if West Virginia had finished off that game in last year's tournament. Like everybody would be saying they're going to lose to UNCG. It's just funny how everything changes when somebody finally accomplishes that one thing that people say they can't.
What's funny is, and that's what everyone's saying about Xavier, right? Like they've never made a Final Four and everyone's like, well, they can't get there. And they lost in the Elite Eight last year to Gonzaga. So it's like that would be like the ultimate storyline from that bracket, I think.
Are they, quick sidebar, are they the best program that's never been to a Final Four?
Yes, I think so.
I think so too. I think I'm with them, you.
I'm trying to think like they have the most tournament wins without making a Final Four. I saw that stat. I'm trying to think like what other teams off the top of your head can you list that haven't made a Final Four?
It's funny. I think that because I think my number two, and I'm 90% sure this is right, Missouri, I don't think has ever been to a Final Four. Yeah. And they're right. They're right there, right below that. That could be the team they play in the second round.
Right, right. Yeah, because, you know, I think there was always Gonzaga or Xavier was that team of not making a Final Four of who was the best program. Or that was always, like, the correct answer.
Sexy Sweet 16 matchup, potentially.
I know. So looking at the regions, what do you think if you have to go 1-4 in terms of hardest, easiest, how do you go?
I think that, man, like all things considered again, I think I probably go Midwest as the toughest, South right behind it with Virginia and Kentucky and Arizona. That may be the toughest. I don't know. I go back and forth between those two. Then actually, I probably say the West would be three, and then I think the East is the easiest. I think Nova got the best draw again.
So we'll go look at some individual matchups here in the first round. What are some of the upsets? You know, everyone wants to know who's the 5-12, 6-11, 4-13, whatever, anything like that. What are some of the ones that you think have a legit chance of winning, or do you not see any upsets?
You mentioned the one earlier. The one that jumped out at me is Charleston and Auburn. I think College of Charleston is a really, really good team. They weren't as good as I wanted them to be at the beginning of the season. I thought that they had a chance to go into SoCon play with like a really sparkling record. It did not happen. I still think they can beat Auburn. Auburn looked just atrocious in the second half against Alabama.
Right.
I mean, is everybody going to pick South Dakota State over Ohio State?
I don't think I am.
You're not?
I'm not going to because everybody will.
See, but I feel like in tournaments, like I always have that hesitation too. But then the game that everybody's picking winds up coming true. Like last year, it was Middle Tennessee over Minnesota.
Yeah,
and like everybody had it. And I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe I'll hesitate. But then I did it at the last second. I'm glad I did. And like everybody had Rhode Island making it to the round of 32, and
yeah,
that
had,
happened too.
They played Creighton with all the injuries and everything like that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And they damn near beat Oregon too. But a lot of times, like, the trendy pick that you want to avoid, like, shouldn't be avoided. So, like, I don't know. I'll have to look at it, but it's going to be hard for me to not ride with my guy, Mike Dalton.
What do you think the trendy picks are going to be? It's definitely going to be, like, Charleston over Auburn and what was the other one we just said?
South Dakota State over Ohio State.
Yeah. Do you think those two are the trendy ones?
I think South Dakota State definitely will be. I think New Mexico State over Clemson will be just because Clemson's not name brand college basketball. I feel like people are going to kind of hate on them. And New Mexico State's sort of, for a 12 seed from a lower tier conference, they're as close to like a name brand recognition as I think you can get.
Right.
I feel like if Murray State was up against any of the other fives, they'd have a really like good puncher's chance. But West Virginia is just, they're so physical, and that, you know, clutch and grab press is so tough for a low conference team that hasn't seen that style. I think Murray's really good. I wish they'd gotten a better draw.
The other ones I kind of like, the one I really like is Marshall over Wichita State. Just because Wichita State can't defend, they give up a lot of threes. That's what Marshall wants to do.
Yeah, that I actually, in my initial, like the real quick thing I wrote for SB Nation right when the bracket came out, I said Marshall was the Cinderella in that region. Yeah. Just because, like, they're red hot, and Dan Toney, I think he's a really good coach, really good X's and O's guy. And you have to have a really good coach to beat Greg Marshall, because if not, he will just take you to task. Because the dude may be out there. He may be, he might get into a fight with a fan during the game, but he knows how to coach.
Yeah. And then the other one I think that'll be a little trendy is Loyola over Miami.
Yeah. No, I think you're right about that, because Loyola, dominated a Missouri Valley, which is usually a really competitive league. And I think a lot of Miami's kind of like Clemson. Nobody really thinks that they're that good until they win a couple of games. That's probably going to be a trendy pick. I don't know if I'll take that one. I have to look at it.
Do you think any of these, or what sub 10 seed team, or even what double digit team do you think has the best shot of getting to a second weekend? Because that's always what ends up being right. Like, everyone wants to pick the first round upsets, but then it's like, oh wait, now what?
I'll say Charleston again, just because they do. Like, if they beat Auburn, they get the winner of Clemson, New Mexico State. I think they can beat either of those teams. I mean, that could be one of those funky years where you get a 12-13 in round two.
Right.
I wouldn't be shocked if both of those teams got beat. I'm trying to if Marshall gets past Wichita State, which I'm with you, I think that's certainly possible. Like, I don't pick them over West Virginia for the same reasons that I can't pick Murray over West Virginia. It's just like you can't prepare for that physical defense. I'm curious for looking at the first four teams, because every year we've had the first four since it started in 2011.
They always win.
One of those teams has won at least one game in the main draw.
Well, it's going to be Syracuse. We already know this.
I don't know if I'm going to pick it this year. I don't know if I can do it. It's probably going to be Syracuse.
Actually, you know what? When I do kind of like, though, if you're looking at first four teams, is UCLA. Just because Aaron Holiday's so good.
Yeah, if I had to pick one, if UCLA had been matched up with if they had won their first four game and got to play TCU, I'd probably go ahead and take that. Like, Florida, I don't know what the hell to do with Florida, and I haven't.
That's why I like UCLA there too.
Yeah, it's a safe point. If Florida makes a billion threes, they can beat anybody, but they typically don't make a billion threes. So, that's going to be a tough. That's going to be one of those ones that I just pawn over for way too long and wind up being totally wrong anyway.
What second round matchup, not named Kentucky Arizona, do you most want to see?
I mean, I know I brought it up. Like, I do want to see Villanova Bama just because I want Jalen Brunson versus Colin Sexton. I think that would be just so much fun. I think that would be an absolute blast. I'd also really like to see, it would take a lot for it to happen. Like, I would love to see UCLA get to the second round if they got past Florida and go up against Texas Tech. Because I think Texas Tech's a DL fun team to watch, not just sort of hey, they're an overachieving program that's usually not that good. Like, they're super fun. They've got some ridiculous dunkers. They've got some ridiculously talented players.
Zaire Smith's the most fun player in college basketball.
He's incredible. He can make sort of the NCAA tournament highlight that shows up on one shiny moment. And then you got other dudes who can score 25-30. Like, I think that would be a really fun second round matchup if it happens.
You know what one I want, and people are going to yell about it? I want Trae Young versus Duke.
Yeah.
I want Trae Young versus Duke.
That was going to be my next conspiracy theory if we went on, was that not only like they're trying to shield Oklahoma from the first four because they don't want Trae Young to lose before Thursday, Friday, and then they want him to go up against Duke if it's possible.
They got a Rhode Island team struggling a little bit.
That would be a ratings bonanza. I would watch that game like well past the point where it was decided, just because it would be Trae Young versus Duke.
Yeah, and it would be on Saturday on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, now that you say that, I'm 100% with.
I mean, and I just want everyone to. I want the Trae Young conspiracies. Like, that's all I want. I almost want Oklahoma to make the Final Four just for the Trae Young conspiracies.
For so long this season, I've been like, Oklahoma is going to be a team that everybody picks to go to the Final Four or to lose in the first round. There's going to be no in between, just because people are so extreme on Trae Young. And now I feel like everybody's just going to pick them to not make it out of the first weekend. Right. But the ones that do are going to put them to the Final Four still.
Could you imagine if they beat Duke, Michigan State, and Kansas to get to the Final Four?
Well, now I want it to happen. Now I want the Trae Young redemption story. Because the thing that is, like, he's probably not going to win all these National Player of the Year awards now.
No.
And so I want him to do kind of what like Kemba did in 2011, which is just make everybody look really stupid. Like, remember Ben Hansborough won Big East Player of the Year.
Same thing with Shabazz. Didn't like wasn't that where like who won the American Athletic Player? That
Shabazz year? Did.
Shabazz did. Okay, because it was he so did. Kilpatrick got screwed that year.
And Russ Smith. It was the year that
I knew it was the three of them.
The AAC had three first-team All-Americans, which is just a fantastic stat. But, yeah, that year in 2011, like everybody always says it was the Jimmer-Kemba year, which isn't true at all because Kemba wasn't even his conference player of the year. He just went on a ridiculous run. Like, I want Trae Young to do that now where, like, nobody gives him any major awards, and then he just averages, like, 45 and 20 during a run to the Final Four. It makes everybody look stupid.
All right, guys, it is officially March Madness. We got the NCAA tournament getting underway here. So what better time to start gambling? I mean, I love using it. I obviously put out lines and love talking about it. You know where you got to go is mybookie.ag. It's the perfect place to put down some money, score big on college hoops. They don't give you the runaround when you ask for a payout. I wouldn't recommend a service that's not good. It's a good service. Like I said, I use it. There's no reason for anyone else not to. I wouldn't promote anything I don't believe in. So that's why I urge you to make your way to mybookie.ag. If you win, they pay. Hopefully we all win together. We can talk on Twitter, what games we like, everything like that. Like I said, you'll be wasting your time if you're betting anywhere else. So you go to mybookie.ag. They'll match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. You can enter for a chance to win their $1 million bracket challenge. If you win $1 million, you throw me a little bit because I referred you. Use promo code SOUND to activate your offer. So, again, go to mybookie.ag, use promo code SOUND, and you get 50% bonus with your deposit. What's better than free money other than maybe winning $1 million in their bracket challenge? You can do live betting. You can do everything. Again, mybookie.ag. And use promo code SOUND. Going back into this, obviously, let's start taking a look down to the second weekend and the Elite Eight because you can't really predict it. But do you think this is going to be a chalk tournament, or do you think we're going to see like the 5-3 Elite Eight matchups?
I think it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be a chalk tournament. I think it's going to get to a point where you've got a couple of chalky Elite Eights, but it's going to be one of the best of both world tournaments are the exciting first weekends. Then things kind of shake out in the second weekend and you get four like legitimately really good teams in the Final Four. I think this could wind up being one of those tournaments. So I think you get sort of some funky Sweet 16 matchups, but then some really good Elite Eight ones, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think that's what people get confused with is like everyone screams upsets, but then no one watches if you have like, what was it? Ole Miss, LaSalle, and like the round of 32. It's like you don't want that in a Sweet 16 game.
Yeah, and that's what's going to wind up happening. I think you're going to see a couple of those where it's like I'm just picking out a name like UNC Greensboro is playing, whoever, I guess Xavier in the Sweet 16. I think I could see something like that being possible where you've got just sort of these throwaway Sweet 16 games that are totally one sided. But then you get some
fans would lose their mind, if that happened. and I would. I would crack up because Cincinnati fans, like, first off, they think I'm a Xavier Homer, which is my favorite. Like, I get called a Xavier Homer more than a Kentucky Homer. I have zero ties to Xavier. Besides, I live closer to Xavier's campus than Cincinnati's campus.
Did you know, Riggs, that Chris Mack's wife is from Louisville?
Yeah, that's. I mean,
have
that's,
you heard that?
I've heard that's why he's taking the job.
it's all the hot gossip around here. Every like 3 hours or so, somebody will like just hit me up with like a Twitter message or an email, being like, "Hey, man, not sure if a lot of people know this, but Chris Mack's wife actually is from Louisville. She played basketball at Holy Cross." And
I'm
like,
excited to see
hot news
when the off season hits and they're down there visiting family and whatnot. And you get the picture of Chris Mack like out in Louisville, being like, he's dining at down by the riverfront.
Oh, I already like screwed with everybody because Evan Daniels he tweeted out his podcast link with his interview with Chris Mack, and Evan's from Louisville, so I guess he was in town when he tweeted it out. So at the bottom of the tweet, it said like from Louisville, like sent from Louisville, and like I screenshotted the from Louisville and was like, oh my god! And all these people just took it seriously. They were like, holy shit, Chris Mack's in Louisville taping podcast. It's already happening. So I'm excited for a full off season of that.
It's gonna rival like, you know, LeBron's touring private schools in Philly for his kids. Like, I love things like that. Like I love getting the tips, being like, oh my god, look what's going on here. Because it's always the most ridiculous thing. Like, you know, my mom's neighbor's nail salon had Chris Mack's wife in, and she said she likes the city. It's happening.
I can't wait. I live for this stuff. Like, I'm so excited for it, but then I'm going to get so tired of it because,
yeah,
like, it's fun to joke about.
On it.
But then, you know, I host, like, a radio show, and so you get, like, 15 straight callers saying the exact same thing, and you're like, no, you weren't listening 5 minutes ago. That's not true. So, it's the worst of both. But we've never really been through this here with basketball.
Right.
Like the Rick Pitino thing happened, like, sort of in the, you know, just, like, 2 days. Tom Jurich came out and said, I'm going after Pitino, and then it was done.
It was also early. Like, it was pre-internet, too.
That too, yeah. I mean, that was, what, 2001 was when that happened. So it's like the first modern big search for a Louisville basketball coach, and people are just going to lose their damn minds. So here we go.
Quick segue to Louisville. If Pitino got the Georgia job, would that be the most funny thing in the world?
I think he would just hate it. Like, I think he just wants to coach so badly that he's willing to throw his name in that ring.
Oh, right,
I think he would hate coaching at Georgia. I think he would hate coaching back in the SEC at a program besides Kentucky.
Yeah,
because then
he
realized
so football heavy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're UK and you go to play, you know, at Auburn on a Wednesday night or Tuesday night or whatever, the place is packed and people are going crazy because it's Kentucky. When you're Georgia and you're going to play Auburn on a Tuesday night, like, nobody gives a shit. And and so I think that would just drive him crazy. I think he already had enough of an issue playing, you know, games at Seton Hall at the Prudential Center when he was at Louisville because the crowd wasn't good enough because there weren't enough people there. Like, I don't think he would like it at all. And it would just – his sort of passive-aggressive shots would just make me laugh so hard.
Pitino getting hired during the NCAA tournament would be my favorite thing in the world.
I mean, it would just take away from – it would be like the top story in college basketball, which is just – I mean, during the tournament, which is just outrageous.
Depending how the tournament goes, I want it to happen.
It would be something like that. Always happens, though. Like, last year, it was the Romar stuff and the Porter going to Missouri potentially. Well, that kind of took attention away. It always happens.
Crean got fired the day the tournament started.
Crean got fired right before the start of the Thursday games. Yeah, that's
it was
right.
Like 10 minutes before.
It was a brilliant news dump by India. I had totally forgotten that.
Yeah, that might be the ultimate news dump.
It was fantastic.
I forget who it was. Somebody fired their coach today during the bracket reveal. Some mid major. And I thought that was a good one, but I don't think it'll top Indiana firing Crean 10 minutes before the bracket or before the tournament starts.
Crean was great just because everybody's like, you know, before that first Thursday game, everybody's like, here we go, baby, like firing up the taking pictures of like their computers and all this stuff. And then it was like, holy shit, Tom Crean got fired. I guess we need to write about this. Here we go. Like, sorry, Notre Dame, Princeton, you're going to have to take like a 10-minute delay.
So getting back to this. All right, let's go. We'll do picks because everyone wants to know picks. Who do you like as the – we'll go Elite Eight. Who do you like in your Elite Eight going through the regions?
Man, like, I have not filled out a bracket yet, so I'm just kind of doing
We're going off the cuff only because I'll get yelled at if we don't make picks.
Yeah, I'm doing this off the cuff. I'm going to say – oh, Virginia fans, cover your ears. In the South, I'm going to say that Arizona winds up playing somebody random, maybe. I'm going to say Arizona plays Tennessee. And how about this? Tennessee goes to the Final Four.
I'll tell you what, that's a trendy pick.
Is it?
I've had a lot of people say, how can I pencil Tennessee into the – because I think they look at the bottom half and being like, all right, that's a good draw. Then they just have to worry about beating Cincinnati and then a – you know, one of the – you hope you get beat up in the top half of the bracket.
Well, shit. Well, I reserve the right to change this, by the way. I'm just I'm doing this off the top of my head.
Yeah, because I've been doing the same thing. Like, I kind of was leaning, like, Arizona-Tennessee, but I think I'm going to go Virginia, Tennessee, and Virginia. Like, everyone's going to find a reason to pick Arizona or Kentucky. And like we said, it just never works out that way.
You're right, yeah.
So I'll go Virginia over Tennessee in the South. What do you got in the East?
I'm going to go with – I mean, and I know everybody's going to take Gonzaga over Xavier. I'm going to go with Xavier against – man, I'm going to go Xavier, Michigan, and I'll say Michigan wins and goes to the Final Four.
I got Xavier, Michigan, and I think I'm going to go Xavier.
Fair enough. I love John Beilein in March. I love John Beilein, period. Anytime I get Beilein.
He's so
Beilein's the man. And I feel like I'm a Beilein hipster. Like 10 years ago, I remember I did a show with Matt Jones here, and he like had me on when I was in college, and he was like, who is your like five best coaches in college basketball right now? Go. And I just stumped so hard for John Beilein when he was at West Virginia. And I remember he just kind of like was like, I don't even know who this guy is. I have loved Beilein for so long. I want to see him win a national title. I hate that we had to beat him in 2013, which actually, you know, it officially happened, Reeks. I don't know if you know this.
I do remember watching that game.
The game took place. You can find it on YouTube if you want to Google it and you know, check it out. But Michigan lost that game. It happened. But I'd love to see him win a national championship against somebody else.
Yeah, I agree. Because I did the same thing a couple years ago. I wrote a blog where I was like top coaches I want drawing a play or something like that. And like I had Beilein number one. And everyone was like, how would you have him over like Krzyzewski or Roy? I'm like, do you watch him? Because he's awesome.
Love the guy. Super Soakers, great players, great team. Big Beilein guy.
Do you think it's going to be Michigan UNC, right?
It's got to be. I feel like of those two, Carolina's the more susceptible. Like, you know, if they did play A&M in the second round, Carolina's got no real good bigs. Maybe A&M could abuse them there. I don't think that'll be enough to beat them. But I feel like Carolina's kind of more ripe for the picking than Michigan is right now. But I do think they play in the Sweet 16.
Also, why do I feel like UNC and Providence play in the second round every year?
They played – what was it? Was it? I think it was 2014.
The 1-8 year, yeah. When it was the – yeah, because it was Carolina, Providence, and then Kentucky, Indiana, the 4-5 in that top half of the region.
Yeah, they played a really good game when with the year Providence won the Big East tournament, and they kind of had that momentum, and it was that was a fantastic game too.
They play every year, I feel like.
I think you're probably right. It may just be those two that are sticking out to us, but it does feel like every year.
It's like Kentucky, Wichita State. Like you have a couple of good games twice, and you're like, well, they play every year in the NCAA tournament.
It's so true. That's 100% true.
All right, what about out in the? We'll go Midwest next.
So Kansas was kind of my like controversial preseason pick to win it all, and I kind of have like sort of stuck by them the entire season for no reason, even though I don't really like the team that much. But I feel now I feel like I'm pot committed, so I'm going with Kansas, Michigan State in the Elite Eight. I think I'm probably going to take Kansas to the Final Four.
So I'm going to go Duke, Seton Hall in the Elite Eight. I think.
Oh, I love it.
I think I'm going to do it. I'm going to send Duke to the Final Four. I really hate, like, I love the one seeds this year, and I really hate that.
Yeah, I do too, and it's funny because, like, Seton Hall was my team in the middle of the year where I was saying, like, this feels like a season where you're going to have a rando team in the Final Four, at least one. And, I mean, most seasons in recent years have had at least one just sort of crazy outside the wall Final Four team, and Seton Hall was always my pick, but they've been so just disappointing down the stretch.
That's what terrifies me.
But I could see it. I mean, South Carolina showed no signs of doing what they did last year. So.
Right, right. And then the final region up there in the East, the Nova region.
I'm going to go Nova, and I'm going to go chalky. I think this is going to be the chalky region. I'll go Nova versus Purdue. I think Nova wins. And, like, they have one of the, like, crazy NCAA tournament Nova games where they're almost perfect, and they just, like, beat the shit out of Purdue in the Elite Eight.
I'm so mad that this region is Nova and Texas Tech because I was going to put both teams in the Final Four no matter, like, where they were.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely going Nova, Texas Tech. I'll tell you what, I mean, Nova was my preseason pick to win it all, so I have to have them win it all.
So you got Nova over Tech?
Yeah, I have to. Like, I got to stick with what I had in the preseason, right? Like, that can't change. They're a one seed.
I like Tech a lot too. They've kind of been the team that I'm like, they've been like the one sort of this program's not usually good that people have been doubting that I've kind of been like, they're actually really good. They're going to prove it when the season comes to an end. I don't know. I feel like Purdue's kind of a bad matchup. I feel like one of these regions though is going to be super chalky, and I feel like I've got to go with this
one. That does feel like probably the chalkiest region of them all.
Yeah, if somebody gets hot and makes a run, you know, maybe it's UCLA coming out of the first four. Maybe I can see Marshall beating Wichita State too, but I feel like when it gets down to the second weekend, we end up seeing mostly the top seeds.
All right, so who do you think wins this thing?
I mean, I have not. I've been delaying this pick in my mind for months now.
I don't want to make it.
I don't either. I mean, I'll say for right now, just because I picked them at the beginning of the year, I'm going to go with Kansas. Because if they do end up being the national champion, I feel like I'm the only dude who kind of came out in October and picked them and then stuck with them. And I say stuck with them in air quotes because I never would have picked them 3 weeks ago. And I may not pick them in 2 days. But for right now, I'm going to say Kansas beats Michigan in the national championship game. Sorry, John.
I'm going to go Villanova, Virginia for the same reasons. Like, I don't know. I don't think a lot of people picked Villanova in the preseason. So, I just want to be right. So, I'll take that pick. But what your Louisville's an old Big East team. If it's Villanova, Xavier, and you with old Big East, people lose their mind because it's not true old Big East.
Yeah. I think that people would sort of flip out. I mean, Louisville's not really old Big East. That's they're like the new old Big East. They're like Nuevo Rich.
It doesn't matter. Like everyone that played in the Big East, like I'm pretty sure South Florida fans yell about it.
That's right. Yeah, the 1 year they made the tournament and won the first four game.
Right.
Yeah, South Florida is clamoring for the good old days while they lose to whoever in the AAC by 40 every night. Yeah, I this is weird, and as a Louisville fan who just gets abused by Virginia on a semi-annual basis, like I still kind of like this Virginia team, and the lazy jokes about them sort of make me want to root for them in the same way that I was kind of rooting for Gonzaga last year. If I don't know if anybody else feels the same way, but like I just get so sick of they suck, they're gonna blow it, and all this stuff. And I use it sometimes myself when I get pissed off at Virginia fans. But like I sort of want them to buck that trend because I like all the guys on the team. They seem to be pretty fun. They've got some good characters. And Tony Bennett,
super easy to cheer for.
100%. Like again, I sort of wanted them to just like rip apart this narrative that they can't get it done in the NCAA tournament. And I also think that they're just sort of genuinely the best team in the country. And at some there are years where you just want the best team to win, so it's kind of fair. Like I would have no problem if they won the national title this year, just as a fan of the sport.
It'd be a hell of a way for them to get to their first Final Four under Bennett if they beat, like, Kentucky. If they go, like, Creighton, Kentucky, and Cincinnati to get to the Final Four.
Yeah.
Like, that would be – that narrative would change a whole lot about Tony Bennett's style.
Yeah, and if they're going to do it, you like to see them do it that way. Because even Gonzaga, when they made the Final Four last year, people were like, well, they didn't have to play anybody good. Look at the seeds and all that stuff. And I get that kind of fades away with time, but – if Virginia did it this way, there would be no like they would sort of rightfully establish themselves as one of like the 6-7 best programs in the sport at this current moment.
What would be hilarious though is if they go like Kansas State, Buffalo, Loyola. Like that, people would lose their mind and be like, "No, Tony Bennett stinks."
I would love to see them too. Like, I mean, what would happen if they had a total repeat of a couple years ago? You know, everybody's saying Kentucky or Arizona is going to beat them. They play one of those teams in the Sweet 16, just house them, beat them by like 30, and then turn around and lose to like Loyola Chicago in the Elite Eight or something like that. Like that would almost be, I'm not going to say it would be funny, but I'd probably laugh at least a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, cause the narrative would still be there and it'd just be a hilarious narrative.
Sure.
So any other takeaways you got from this thing?
Nothing really stands out besides what we've talked about at this point.
It was a weird draw. Like I don't know if it was like the way it was shown or what, but it was like every year, like I feel like I have like 10 to 15 takeaways right off the bat. And this year I was like, I had like four. And then I was like, I don't know what else to even talk about.
I think the big thing is because there's so little difference between like seed lines 3 through 8 this year, you know, like everybody outside of the top 4 or 5 teams in college basketball has been sort of an amorphous glob where it's just, you know, all these teams lumped together where all their fan bases are saying, well, we could beat anybody on a given night, but we could also lose to anybody on a given night. That's basically every team in the NCAA tournament besides 7 or 8. And so when you have that, it's kind of hard to rip on the committee for stuff. Like, nothing really stands out. And I think they also did a better job this year than in some years past of balancing the regions. Like we talked about, the blue blood region this year is definitely the one with Michigan State, Duke, and is it Kansas over in the Midwest?
Yep.
But those are just kind of based on names more so than their talent this year. There's not really one region where you say the one seed just walks. You can rank them, but it's not as just totally imbalanced as it has been a few times in the last 5 years.
Right. I agree. Even like the year, or you look at the top half with Arizona and Kentucky are kind of down this year for their respective programs, right? And it's the name, right? Like, you see Virginia as the number one overall. I'm like, wait a minute, they have to play Arizona and Kentucky, I should say.
Yeah.
So I agree. It does feel a little bit more balanced because it feels like while Virginia has the tougher, like, Sweet 16 draw, it has the easier round of 32 draw as opposed to Villanova or Kansas.
What's the first round game that you look at? And I'll tell you why I'm asking this in a second. What's the first round game you look at and you're like, these teams just, they fucking suck, and I'm not going to watch this game. This game shouldn't even be in the tournament.
I mean, I think the popular answer to that is going to be Houston, San Diego State. But San Diego State's actually pretty good now that they have, like, a full roster. I'll tell you what, it might be Rhode Island, Oklahoma.
Yeah, I feel it's always the 7-10 or 8-9 games. Yeah. I kind of thought it was, and maybe it changes a little bit because Porter's playing, but Missouri, Florida State just does nothing for me.
Yeah, that doesn't move the needle at all.
And the other one is Nevada, Texas. Nevada maybe would have done it for me if they hadn't just looked so terrible against San Diego State, but I don't think either one of those teams are good. And the only reason I say this is because I do this with one game every year where I'm like, oh my God, I'd rather just watch anything else than this game.
Yeah,
why
is
it seems?
Last year was Xavier, Maryland.
For me, it was South Carolina Marquette. And
that one you had, okay, Marquette's offense for South Carolina's defense.
Well, that's what you thought, and then they're lighting it up. They scored like 180 points or whatever together, and it was one of the more exciting games of the first round. And I felt stupid enough after watching that, and then, of course, South Carolina goes to the Final Four. So I'm hoping that I do this again this year because I'm going to say Nevada, Texas. Like, I don't care about that game. I could not give two shits. So hopefully one of those teams does the same thing and goes on a ridiculous run this year. This becomes a trend.
What it could be, though, is TCU-Syracuse. Like, if Syracuse wins, I don't know a lot of people that would be like, I'm locked into TCU-Syracuse, 9:40 on a Friday night.
Yeah, that's going to be rough.
That's the one that I think people might be like, oh, this is how we're ending the night?
You know who will be watching, crying with the lights out and a glass of wine? Pitt fans.
Yeah, probably. What the... That, by the way, that picture of Kevin Stallings sleeping on the recruiting trip, that's the greatest picture of all time.
I just love how the dude who posted it was like, I've had this for a long time. I've been sitting on it. I didn't want to do it while this human being was actively representing my program. But now that he's gone, here's Kevin Stallings sleeping in public while he's supposed to be recruiting. Like, and it was just perfect.
Credit to him for holding out on that. Because if I was a Pitt fan, I'd be posting that everywhere the moment it happened to try to get him out.
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah, you lose to whoever by 40. Like, they lost to, Savannah State at home or whoever it was back in November. That picture would have been everywhere if that was me. Like, that would have been – I would not have been able to hold the trigger back for that as long as that person did.
But that picture is perfect because that game's in Cleveland, so it's not a far trip from Pittsburgh to Cleveland. He's in, the ultimate dad sleeping pose where he just has, the head down and his hands on his knees. Like, I've seen my father sleep that way 1,000 times.
This is why I think Kevin Stallings is – an evil genius. Like, I think this has all been – this was contrived, 3 years ago. He had given his heart to Vanderbilt. He was in love with Vanderbilt. He'd been there forever.
He was good at Vanderbilt, too.
He was good at Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt, he was good at Vanderbilt.
Sure. Well, yeah, that when you put it like that, he was good-ish. But they kind of broke his heart. He was upset that they were pushing him out. So he comes up with this just great evil scheme to go up to Pitt, suck out loud for 2 years, do everything wrong, and then just bleed them for every penny they own. And I really think he's like Milton from Office Space right now, just like chilling on a beach, full shirt on the beach, drinking a fruity drink and being like, here's my $9.5 million. Like,
he might be sleeping the same way in the chair that he was on the recruiting trip.
That's probably exactly right. That's what Kevin Stallings is doing right now, 100%.
My favorite thing was the day after the firing and all that stuff, it was Kevin Stallings is retiring from coaching. That's the greatest headline in between the picture, the headline, and everything. It's Kevin Stallings is awesome.
I sort of wanted him to call a press conference where he did like a Lou Gehrig thing and was just like, like made himself out to be the ultimate victim and like all the heroes of, you know, the youth of Pittsburgh and Nashville, and then just got tearful and, you know, like three people would be there. Nobody would cover it or write about it. That was kind of my dream.
I mean, how great would it have been though if he would have, like, if they would have beat Notre Dame? Like, what if they went on a run and won the ACC tournament?
All I could think about was the first year the Big East expanded to include all 16 teams, DePaul went 0-18, and they beat Cincinnati in a 16-9 game when Cincinnati was on the bubble, and it was the greatest march of my entire life, Reeks. It was a journey unlike any other. And I think they played Providence in the next round and were winning at halftime. And for those, like, day and a half, that day and a half trip, it was the trip of a lifetime. It was just such a wild ride. I wanted Pitt to take me on another journey like that, and it almost happened. Damn near happened.
Wouldn't have been – here's the perfect setup. Here's what I was secretly hoping for. Pitt goes on the run, wins the ACC tournament. At the same time, we saw Tubby and Memphis get hot. They win the American. First-round matchup in Dayton, Pitt-Memphis.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the winner gets TCU.
That would do it. That would be standard march. I've said forever that my dream is to take the – like the worst 4 or 8 power conference teams, the ones that have just been dying for the season to end since early January, and force them to play in a single elimination tournament, like in in like Bismarck, North Dakota, or something, like just like way out, so they've got to travel.
That awesome gym in like Sioux Falls or whatever, like South Dakota State play that.
Yeah, do that, or make them go to like Gary, Indiana. Somewhere where they can't do anything and they don't want to be
perfect. Gary would be the ultimate setup.
We'll have it there, and then just nationally televise the least exciting, just terrible college basketball you could ever see. It would be all be like that South Park episode where they're playing baseball and they're trying to actively lose their games. That's my dream.
Who would be in it this year? We'd have Pitt, obviously.
Pitt would be in it.
Washington State.
Washington State would be there. Do you throw DePaul in there? DePaul might be the favorite.
They were like sneaky competitive. I think you have to throw East Carolina in there.
But is the AAC a major conference?
I think you have to count them because you have the option of South Florida and East Carolina.
Yeah. If we're doing 8 teams, then yeah. If we're expanding,
right.
Then I'm good with it. I would say Rutgers, but I mean, I don't know after.
Yeah, we saw Rutgers get hot. What about like, I mean, Iowa was pretty not exciting this year.
Iowa was bad. They could be in. Nobody from the Big 12. The Big 12's too good. Like, Iowa State can't be in.
Iowa State would easily win the thing. The SEC, I guess, like, maybe.
Oh, Cal's in. Cal's definitely
in. Cal are definitely for sure. In. Yeah.
Like, that's going to happen.
You throw in Vandy or Ole Miss? Like, they were kind of competitive.
Midseason, Vandy would have been a lock. I feel like they might have played their way out of this.
Right.
I feel like Ole Miss.
Like, Ole Miss was like, they didn't win games, but every game they lost was like 8.
Yeah, we may have to go 2 Pac-12 teams. We may have to, Washington State and Cal might have to both be in.
You know what? We saw this in person. It was just the Pac-12. It's like any game not involving Arizona.
But yeah, so basically, I know you're doing the 3-on-3 turn. This needs to be the next postseason movement.
We force
these teams. Like, we're revoking scholarships if you don't go and play in this tournament. And then everybody would just show up and it'd be like, you know, 27-24. And it would be – I'd probably watch that more than I'd watch Nevada, Texas.
Oh, that'd be so perfect. All right, man, I'll let you get out of here. I know it's been a busy weekend for you.
Yeah, but hey, the best kind of busy, man.
Right.
Who can sleep? Who could sleep at times like these?
Right. Where can everyone find you?
You check me out on SBNation.com, college basketball stuff. Follow me on Twitter @CardChronicle. And for Louisville stuff, if you want to just revel in the misery of another human being, go to CardChronicle.com.
All right, man, appreciate it. See ya.
No problem, Riggs. Thanks for having me, man.